Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cloud 259 Running on Air. I'm Greg Lemelstein, and once again, and as always, I'm with my co-host, Bren Jones. This is episode 104. It's March 22nd, 2021, and spring is in the air, and the running weather is perfect. Bren, what do we have for this show?
That's right, Greg. The running weather is perfect, and it feels really great to get out there in a bit of warmth. Not too hot yet, just right, and much better than slipping and sliding that we all did in February. So, Greg, you've got an interview with Katie Rollman that we're going to share. And then after the interview, we are going to talk a little bit about running streaks and how we're staying motivated. And then we will touch on a new topic I don't believe we've talked about on the show so far, trading cards.
Trading cards. You have a little business idea there, Bren?
Perhaps.
Okay. But first, Bren, let's get right to our interview with Katie Rollman. And a lot of it is a look back to that great day in Atlanta a little over a year ago. But it's also a look ahead to what we hope is on the near-term horizon with getting back to normal, getting back to racing, getting back to non-virtual events, Bren.
Yeah. Here's to non-virtual events. All right. Let's roll the tape.
We are very thrilled to have with us Katie Rollman, who joins us from Dayton, Ohio, who is not only an exceptionally good marathoner, she has a 2:44 personal best and ran 2:51 on a very hilly course in Atlanta for the Olympic trials. But we're also really interested to have Katie on because she's not only has a full-time job, but she's a full-time nurse practitioner. So that's like two full-time jobs. It must have been, especially during the last year. So we're interested to hear what Katie has to say. Katie, big welcome to Cloud 259.
Great. Thank you so much, Greg, for having me on.
We want to start with that great day. We were in Atlanta, Bren and I, covering the event. Just was such a wonderful event for so many people. I'm sure some runners had a difficult day, but you didn't. You did very well. You ran a 2:51. It seemed like the last bit of true running fun.
Yeah.
Big running event right before the world changed. What's your most vivid memory of the Olympic trials and really that whole weekend?
Yeah, the whole weekend, I mean, there's a lot of really good memories because the weekend was amazing. Like Atlanta Track Club totally blew it out of the water with the attention to detail and the just how well they hosted and did a great job catering to the elite, you know, hoping to make the team. And then also the, hey, I qualified and I'm so excited to be here type of runner as well. And I think one memory that I really love of the race itself, you know, so many good ones of the weekend, but the race itself is actually running under the rings over the road in the last couple miles, and they had lit the cauldron kind of next to it. And at that point in the race, it became such a blur that far, and I don't even know how far out from the finish it was, but within the last, few miles. And I was totally done physically. Like, it was a very challenging course and I was done. And running under those were so invigorating as far as it kind of relit my internal torch of like, no, I worked really hard to suffer through this race. As far as, you know, it is such still a privilege to be here and I want to enjoy every single moment. And I think it kind of relit the enjoyment of the race for me and it really still stands out in my mind as a highlight of the course and the day of the actual race.
That's a great visual, with that the Olympic rings. I think there was a nasty little uphill leading into that spot.
Yes, but, there was.
When, and a lot of hills throughout the course, very hilly course. Katie, when did it feel like it was getting difficult for you? When did it get to be a bit of a bear? I mean, you ran really well, but when did you think, uh-oh?
Yeah. It was a little deceiving. Obviously, you know, I studied the course like probably every other person out there did. I knew it was going to be fast at the beginning. You know, it was a lot of down at the beginning and you have your momentum. And then you turn and come back up those hills you just went down. And I think it was the second loop, the ups, is when it was, you know, uphill and wind in your face that I started thinking, wow, I'm really not going to be able to hit the paces I was hoping. And I'm really tired for this early in the race. You know, I'd run a bunch of marathons trying to qualify. And so I was fairly used to what tired versus really tired feels like. And so I was too tired too early. And so I kind of knew I had to back off and just run on effort and kind of try to forget about the time, which is something, no runner mentally wants to just accept, but I knew it was coming.
So what were you targeting? Because you had that 2:44 personal best at Houston. You had run a bunch of marathons. I think you said the trials was your 13th marathon. Were you targeting a 2:44 or better, or did you know that the hills were going to be too?
A little bit of both. So I think, again, most distance runners like to have this healthy optimism, that I was really hoping that maybe I could pull out sub 245 again. That was really my goal. But I knew realistically it was probably going to, I was going to be really happy with in the mid 240s, anything sub 250 even. And I didn't do that. I did like 251. So I'm still happy with my race. I definitely gave it my best shot and left nothing out there. I couldn't have raced it much better on that given day. But I was hoping more for 245 to 247 probably.
Still, I mean, so many people came nowhere near their goals on that course. I mean, I think you said how many, I think the runners' bibs were according to seed, according to your
Correct.
entry. So how many spots did you move up from your seeding?
I don't know exactly, but between over 100, I do know that. Yeah, so I was happy with my race, but
That's
I
great.
wish the time was different, but my effort was definitely there.
Anything else during the weekend, not during the race? Did you meet anybody at the breakfast bar at the hotel, or did you see any heroes?
Yeah, I saw a lot. I didn't get to talk to a lot of them because I also wanted to be respectful of they're here to have a phenomenal race and let them have their space also. But I did ride the elevator up with Stephanie Bruce and
Nice.
was excited to get to chat with her a little bit. And then I talked with Jared Ward actually the morning over breakfast the morning after the race a little bit. And obviously he had high hopes and kind of coming down off of not making the team and just hearing how gracious he still was really inspiring to me actually. He did a he is a he's a class act guy.
He really, well, we've been so lucky to have actually both of them on the show, and they are both class acts, absolutely.
Yes.
So, did you have any worries that weekend? I guess we all kind of in the back of our head were worried about COVID, but it wasn't really apparent how bad it was going to become.
Yeah, actually, I remember watching on TV the Tokyo Marathon because they had no spectators because of COVID. And I remember thinking, oh, wow, that's so different. That would be so weird to race like that, so challenging. This is this weird virus, like what is this? And then it was, just weeks later that we were living that same thing and actually not racing because of it. And so it does feel like a last hurrah at the trials. And it really wasn't on my radar at all. We were in very, very crowded spaces with people all over the country and some, even outside of the US and without a care in the world.
Well, I'm kind of glad to hear you say that because it makes me feel better about being ignorant or at least feeling like it was okay. So you are a nurse practitioner, and I want to talk a little bit about that. You must have had an amazing, very grueling last year, or must have been different at different parts of the year. But first off, just tell us where you work and what kind of patients do you normally see?
Yeah, so I work at Kettering Primary Care Sugar Creek, which is a family practice office in my local community. So I see outpatient, only outpatient. I don't do anything in the hospital. And I see newborns through geriatric. So my perspective on COVID is a little bit different. It's definitely affected my day-to-day life, but I'm not dealing with like the sickest of the sick of it. I'm not in the hospital at all. So we actually for a time got really busy because everything was ask your doctor, ask your healthcare provider. So we had a lot of questions that we had to field, which really bogged down our time and our day. And also just the fear, some healthy fear of we don't know what this is. what should I do? So we were dealing with a lot of that. And then it actually got like really slow because nobody wanted to step foot in a healthcare facility because of some of the fear of being exposed there. So we were doing a lot of telehealth, a lot of just kind of triaging over the phone type of stuff. We were still seeing patients in our office, but for a time we were actually trying to keep our well patients over either telehealth or rescheduling for later, just to try to not cross contaminate, for lack of a better term. And then it kind of started getting back to usual. So I'd say now we're still doing some telehealth. We're still, you know, obviously taking a lot of precautions, but now the effect that COVID has on my work is really more the prevention, you know, talking about vaccines, talking about risk and quarantining and, you know, all of that. So it's still something that I talk about with just about every patient, but my actual day-to-day seeing patients, you know, answering questions, all of that is kind of resumed to its normal flow, which is nice. I like being back to normal.
Yeah. So now it sounds like you're not necessarily directly involved in vaccine or giving out vaccinations, but you're helping your patients find the places to get vaccines. How does it work in Ohio?
Yeah. So I work for a network of offices of both specialty and primary care. And so our whole network has a centralized vaccine distribution area. So I help them get set up appointments through that, but I'm not doing any on-site or overseeing any of that specifically.
Okay. And have you been vaccinated? I imagine yes.
Yes, I have been. Yes. I'm very thankful for that.
Okay. Congratulations. That's great. I hope much of your family is vaccinated already as well. Do you have other medical professionals, doctors, nurses in your family?
In my in-laws family, I do. In my family, I'm actually pretty much the first, I think, medical provider. All of my family are teachers, and then my in-laws have multiple nurses and a doctor, but they're all out in Seattle.
Yep, yep. So this is maybe a big question. Maybe there's many answers, but is there anything that you as a medical professional wished we had done differently with hindsight early on?
You know, that is a very difficult question because hindsight is always closer to 2020, you know, and I think there were a lot of good done. There were definitely some areas that I think most people hindsight could say, oh, we could have done that differently. But I'm definitely not going to be one to be the one to judge because I don't envy those who were in the decision-making you know, seat because we didn't know what we didn't know. And so, that's a tough situation to be in.
You know, I agree. I think we have to have a bit of humility about it because we really didn't know. So were you running throughout just a little bit to keep your fitness, or did you put running on the shelf for a while? I'm curious also coming off the trials, such a great day. I was like, what were your goals after the trials? Were you hoping to run another marathon soon, get right back at it? Or, you know, how did you approach running, let's say, in the spring?
Yeah, I actually was not going to be running another marathon.
Okay.
I was definitely going to be running and training. I mean, I really enjoy running and training, not just only slow leisure running. Actually, I made myself a deal before the trials that I was not going to run a marathon for a year after the trials.
Okay.
Because I had just, yes, I had run a lot of marathons in 2019 to try to qualify. If I had qualified earlier, I wouldn't have had to do that. But I did do a lot of marathon running, and especially actually, I think the trials was marathon 4 in a total of 5 months. So my body was just really tired. And, you know, each of those marathons also represent training. And I just wanted to kind of take a step back. I was definitely planning on still running, still training. I have a group of girls here in Dayton that I get to train with, and I love the camaraderie, and you know, my husband runs as well, and so running is such a part of life. I knew that wasn't going to go away, but I wanted to just do like local 5K, 10K for a season, and then maybe get back at it in the fall with a half. And then I did a 50K also, but that is much different. And then was targeting Boston of this year, which obviously is moved or canceled. Mm-hmm.
Well, what's your view now? Boston is going to go on in the fall.
Yeah.
So what's your marathoning outlook now? Or are you going to be more of an ultra marathoner with the 50K?
Yeah. I am still considering myself a road marathoner, mm-hmm. for sure. I am actually going to run Glass City Marathon in about a month here in Toledo, Ohio. And then I'm still decided about the fall, potentially Boston, but I'm kind of holding off making decisions just yet.
Okay, fantastic. Glad you're still, you know, raring to go on the marathon.
Yeah. And yeah, the marathon is definitely my favorite distance, which some people I know say, how is that even possible? But I enjoy the marathon. I think it's by far my strongest, and so I'm excited to get back to it.
Now, here's something I found really interesting, because this is unusual. In college, you were running for Cedarville University. Do I have this right? You ran the 4x200, and you have the school record in the 4x200?
Yes. Yeah. I will clarify, I was not a 200 runner, but I was a 400, 800 runner. So, I happened to be that year the fourth fastest 200 runner, even though I was mainly a 400, 800. So I will say I was partnered up with some other pretty speedy girls, to get that school record. But yes, I did have the school record in the 4x2.
That is some range, the 200 to the 50K. Yeah. Okay, that's pretty amazing. So you're also a coach, right? Do you coach a little bit?
Yes. I coach at Cedarville University now, and it's really fun. I love it. Love the girls. Love the atmosphere.
And is that something you'll continue to do, I guess, you know, alongside your nurse practitioner work? You think you'll remain an assistant coach, or think you might be a full-time coach someday?
I mean, probably not. You know, we never know what the future holds, but at this point, my main job, you know, career-wise is nurse practitioner. And so I enjoy being an assistant coach because I'm there a couple of times a week and, you know, can not have to carry some of the responsibility and you know, time commitment that goes along with being a head coach or a full-time coach. I like my balance right now.
Yeah. Well, speaking of time commitments, that's what I wanted to ask you. Two more questions, Katie. One is, when do you get in your training? Because we spoke with Marty Hahir, who was a medical student, is now about to become a doctor, and it's a great marathoner. And he says he gets up at something 4:30-ish, some ungodly hour. When do you fit in your training?
Well, different training cycles have looked differently. And, you know, winter looks different than summer. And but typically, I will, right now, what I'm doing is Tuesdays and Thursdays, I have shorter days at work, which allows me to get my hard days in then, and weekend, you know, long run. And then right now I'm doing an evening run after work, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. But sometimes it's an early morning, and I have definitely, you know, when I was kind of in the throes of trying to qualify for the trials and I was doubling a lot, there was a lot of early mornings and starting out with the headlamp and reflective gear and, you know, you make it happen. You know, if it's something you love, it's something you prioritize, and that's important to you. It's not I can't do it because I have X, Y, and Z. It's like, oh, well, when am I going to run? Because obviously that's going to happen. And so you just make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess. I mean, I don't have the kind of job you have. But so last question. We asked this of all of our listeners, Katie. It's for any listener who's an experienced marathoner just wants to get better. Doesn't matter whether it's a sub three, which is what Brent and I set out to do with this show. We were able to do it, or a sub four or a sub five. What's your one tip for anyone to set their marathon best?
I think ultimately, just keep running. You know, there will be seasons of running, seasons of life that you get a lot faster, and seasons that you feel like you're at a standstill. But it is a cumulative process, and it's not always a straight trajectory. You know, sometimes you have down times or slower times before you have faster times. So I think, you know, look at the long haul. I've now been marathoning about 8 years, mm-hmm. something like that. And my first marathon was not anywhere close to my most recent one. You know, I was probably close to 40 minutes slower.
Wow.
And so it's just a, you know, continued process, and each training cycle gets you in better shape to start the next training cycle in better shape, and you gradually work there. So just keep running.
It reminds me of Desi Linden's famous saying, keep showing up.
Yeah, definitely.
And by the way, Desi Linden also has something in common with you. She's looking to break the 50K world record, I think, sometime soon. Did you know that?
I did not know that, but it is actually not that fast. I have looked at it. And she can definitely do it. I would not be the least bit surprised.
So your money's on her.
Yes, it is.
I wonder if you could take her in the 200, though.
I may be able to take her in the 200. But 50K, yeah, she's got me.
All right, Katie. So thanks so much for your time. It was a pleasure to get to know you and to hear some of your stories. And we're happy that you're going to be getting back at the marathon. And maybe we'll see you at Boston. I know you have Glass City and Toledo coming up. So we'll keep an eye on those results. So good luck with everything. And thanks so much.
Sounds good. Thank you, Greg.
Well, many thanks again to Katie for that interview. You know, Bren, we give a lot of well-deserved attention to Safwan Hassan for running the 1500 and 10,000 double at the World Championships, but that's nothing compared to the 250K double that Katie Roman has pulled off in her career.
All while not being coached by Alberto Salazar.
That's right.
Thanks for that interview. So, Greg, you know, we've been trying to stay motivated we've each been trying to do our own kind of running streaks. This year, I had such a lame year of running last year that I decided I had to build up a bit. So I decided to do 100 miles in the month of January. I know some of our listeners are doing 100 miles a week, and then to build up. So each month I do more than the last. So I'm streaking, Greg. I have two straight months of at least 100 miles, and the second month was more miles than the first month. So if I can run about 70 miles in the last 10 days of March, I will I'll have three straight months of 100 increasing mileage from the month before. So yeah, that's the way I'm doing it. Now I'm doing it month by month, and you're doing it week by week. And as I understand the way I'm doing it, I'm in good shape at the end of each month after having to make up for my relative sloth at the beginning of the month. And you are in very good shape at the end of each week. Is that right?
That's right. And then I get out of shape on Monday and Tuesday. I don't know who started the streak first, but I guess around the same time.
But yours is ridiculous, Greg, because you've done what, like 40 point? You started at 40 and then you've gone up by like 2/10 of a mile each week or something?
Yeah, so mine is I want to run more each week than the week before. And it started in mid-December and it was in the 38, 39 range. And now it's close to 44.
Oh, okay.
You can't overdo it, Bren. If I go up even 1 mile per week, by the end of the year, I'll be at 90-something miles. So I don't want to do that. You got to sliver it.
I love how you said by the end of the year, because now we can really peg you to this. Are you going to do this for all 52 weeks this year? You will run more miles than the prior week. I mean, that is impressive. Is this a feat of consistency that you are willing to take on?
I'm going to keep it as long as it can go. If it's an entire year, great.
So you're saying it could be like 5 years.
I'd really have to sliver it. So, you know, I'm not really watching Strava as I'm like running around my driveway, you know, like trying
to get... Okay, well, who's got the record for this? I mean, this is interesting. You know, we've heard of people who've run, you know, sub 4 minute miles for a certain number of years or have run every single day for 30 years. But who has run more miles week over week. What's the record for that?
I don't think it's in the books, but I don't know. Maybe I'll claim it. 50? Maybe a whole year of this would be the record.
Yeah, great.
But you seem to think that yours is so normal and mine is so ridiculous. Why is that?
I agree. I totally think mine is normal and yours is ridiculous. Well, first of all, they're both ridiculous for different reasons. But I think mine is normal, at least for my life, because it allows me some slack. Mm. Now, yours is, I mean, mine is not normal for someone who's truly motivated to knock out a great marathon this fall, right? It's not enough. But, you know, I've always been a person who believes in rest and times during running and then, you know, sort of cram times in running. So the whole sine curve thing. Whereas I think that, you know, there are runners who are very well suited more towards just plateauing. And you're sort of on a very gentle rise, sort of like a plateau with a very gentle slope, I suppose. Mm-hmm. You're being a far more noble runner than I am, but...
Well, I don't know about noble, but I will say that I do have the flexibility in there to take a day off, unless it's on a Sunday when I've got 15 miles to do, so...
But we've both found that that we're both still slackers in the procrastination sense. Like, you know, and I got up to an okay start in March. Well, the second week of March was great, but then the third week I totally flopped. So now I'm going to have to pull out some heroics. And thanks to some of my Joggers Club friends who helped me get through some ridiculous miles in the last few months of February, which was a real bear because there are fewer days in February than in January.
So you're through the hardest month.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. And of course we'd be remiss if we didn't mention what was it called? Des Tober last year when Des Linden ran the number of miles of the day of the month it was. So she built up from 1 on the first day to 31 on the last day. And
yeah, that's a tall order.
And but it must have been weird for Des the first week or so because that just be like nothing for her.
Yeah, right.
You know, like to follow a 1 mile day with a 2 mile, like what? That's just nothing.
Yeah, that's strange. Good point. But, you know, you call it ridiculous, Brian. I think the ridiculousness is part of the whole thing with any kind of streak. It's like, it's ridiculous, but it's motivating because it's ridiculous. And it becomes a thing. For example, one day, there was a Sunday, 6 weeks ago or so, where it was like snowing. It was really wet, heavy snow, and I needed to get in 8 miles. And my wife very reasonably said, well, why don't you just, you know, do a double tomorrow. Why don't you do the 8 on Monday? And I'm like, no, of course I'm not going to do that. I can't possibly do that. What are you kidding?
It kind of gets at something about training, doesn't it? Running and training and our subculture. But I bet, Greg, I bet when you got the run done, you felt fantastic, right?
Yeah, like, right. You just you pretend that it's a thing and it's not really a thing. It's a ridiculous nothing. But you pretend it's a thing.
But then you're superhuman for getting it done. And that's really, you know, when you're really, you know, I can recall being in the throes of marathon training on a Sunday night, reading one of my kids to sleep and falling asleep and waking up at 10 o'clock and thinking, I have to run 20 miles now. Like, how is this going to happen? But I did it. Like, you know, it's just, and when you do those things, you afterwards, you feel like a superhero.
Yeah, it's about taking the choice away, I guess.
I think when you're really in it, like, you know, for our streaks, we're not in fighting shape yet, though you're getting there. But, you know, you have to be dedicated on a certain level where you make those hard decisions and you do run when it doesn't seem that reasonable. You know, as long as you can stay not injured, you know, then I think it makes sense. You know, we had a... Ron Romano did his 15 miles a day early this year, and that was a ridiculous streak. And then he did end up getting injured. So, you know, one must be careful about these things. But
don't jinx me.
Yeah, you're not jinxed. And I will keep checking your miles on Strava every Saturday night to see how many you have to run on Sunday. You can't get too far in a hole. It's keeping you consistent. It's good.
Yeah.
So just tell us before we move on to trading cards, Greg, just you mentioned before we started recording earlier today about Nate had you do one workout that is starting to resemble something of the kind of workout that you used to do when you were really
well
fit.
Said. Well said. It's a taste. It's a we used to call the long runs that he would prescribe the beasts. this is a baby beast. It was just, it was nothing more than just 12 miles at easy pace, but miles 3, 6, 9, and 12 were at marathon pace, with a big asterisk next to it, not sub 3 marathon pace, but what he calls cycle marathon pace, which means in this cycle.
So
in this cycle, I'm hoping to run under 3:20, so it would be 7:35 pace for that cycle marathon pace. So, I mean, that's hard for me. It was no walk in the park, but I was able to do it, and I felt great about it. But I think I would recommend this workout because it's just a it's an easier way to sort of mentally focus on just getting through the next up tempo mile, and just you don't worry about the other three. You just get through that one. And then you got some easy miles, and then you just do it again, and you do it again, and then hopefully you get through all of them. But you don't worry about it. You just worry about the one that's in front of you.
I like that a lot. I think that's great. You know, I recently, I've been doing a few of these types of workouts, but I've just been trying to do every other mile at 7-something. And then usually the way it works out in a longer workout, I try to chisel it down, you know, to the low 7s toward the end.
Yeah.
But I find that it helped to, when I've done that, it's really helped to break up a longer run because you are just focused on that sort of, okay, when's the next hard mile? And you're relaxing a lot in between the hard miles.
Yep.
So that time, it's a very effective way to do, I think, a 10-miler, a 12-miler, a 14-miler. And I really like that you've brought to the table this idea of doing it every third mile is a little harder. And I also say this is a good like early cycle workout for people who are just getting in shape as opposed to people who, you know, Greg, when you were really hitting it, Nate had you do, you know, 4 miles at marathon pace and then like one sort of pretty fast rest mile and then another 4 at marathon pace and such. So
yep. So a long way from that, but hopefully I'm on the on ramp, the long on ramp to the highway.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's great.
Good. The other thing is about these workouts is you're never out of it. Like, so if you say, well, I'm going to run 12 miles and they're all going to be under 8 minutes or something like that. Like you could fall off and by the second mile, you're like, well, that didn't go well, but you're kind of always in it. If you just say, it doesn't matter what the time is, I'm just going to try to run a few up tempo, you know, one up tempo mile, then another one later. You're kind of in it for longer.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Bren. I'm really interested about this topic and what you have to say about it. I hope I didn't cost you tons of money by scoffing at your idea years ago. How many years ago, Brent?
All right. Well, several years ago, I was like, Greg, you know what we should do at Cloud 259? We got this great photographer, Andy Kiss, and others who've taken pictures for us who are great photographers. And as a kid, I collected baseball cards. I love baseball cards. I was like, why aren't there running cards? Like I want Usain Bolt rookie. Like, and now how much would Eliud Kipchoge rookie be worth?
Oof.
How much would Bernard Lagat rookie be worth? Like a lot of money. Allyson Felix rookie, like boom. Right. But of course it's not just about the money. It's about like collecting all the cards and, you know, track and field and marathon running. There are a lot of people who like, I want their trading cards. So I've been thinking for a while. Well, I suggested a few years ago, and we were like, what are we supposed to do with this podcast? I suggested trading cards, but you really were like, meh.
Oh, boy.
I don't even think you gave me a meh. I don't know if there was even an answer.
Oh, dear.
And
now what's happened? So you've paid more attention than me.
So I've probably like a lot of people during the pandemic gotten back into some old hobbies.
Mm-hmm.
And one was, as a kid, I collected baseball and football cards and a lot of them. And so the value of a lot of these cards has risen quite dramatically, but they have to be in extremely good condition and they have to be the right cards. Most of the cards that people our age collected as kids are still worth nothing. But, you know, it was about the joy of the collection back then. And it's still a little bit about that now, the joy of sorting it out. And, you know, I've been geeking out on it and it's been a lot of fun. So in preparation for this podcast, I said, well, I can't just assume that there are no track and field cards out there. I should actually check. And indeed, Greg, there are some track and field cards out there. It's just scattered.
Huh.
Most of them or many of them that I'm finding were in Sports Illustrated's for Kids. have had these sort of perforated cards in their magazines for years. And they're not exclusively track and field athletes, but there are some track and field athletes among them. So indeed, Greg, I got on eBay about 20 minutes before we started taping a Bernard Lagat from Sports Illustrated for Kids. It was perforated and it probably in somewhat horrible condition. And I think I paid like a dollar for it. So there isn't very much demand for these cards. So perhaps it's a great opportunity. I also bought, and I think this was a better purchase perhaps, given the potential and the relative, I think, condition of the card. In 2017, Topps came out with it's called an Allen and Ginter set. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing Ginter right, but it's Ginter. And so I guess Topps does these sets that include athletes from a number of different sports. And they had a Vashti Cunningham card, which they had two different versions, one with the white background, one with a black background. And it's a nice looking card. So I ordered a few of those. And I think that's a good, I think that's a good play. I mean, I think it's a nice card. Why not? If I've got all these baseball and football cards, why not throw in the odd track or field card that I can find? But I still think that it's a great, you know, from what I've seen online, there, and I have to do some more poking around here. There are various sets. There's sort of like Olympic heroes sets, and but there isn't really that sort of one dedicated set to track and field athletes that you can get on a 1 year and then the next year and the next year. And it would just be fun. But I, given that there are no bids for any of these items on eBay, either no one has discovered this yet, none of the people who are geek out on running are really into cards, or there simply is no demand for it. And even cards that I thought maybe there would be demand for, like there's some Bruce Jenner cards, and you'd think that some people would be speculating that, oh, a Bruce Jenner card might be worth something. And but nah, there doesn't seem to be much interest in those, though they are out there. But I think,
Interesting.
you know, I part of the reason that I was thinking of this is just we have great photos of some of these athletes, and if you look at some of these trading cards, the photos are not impressive. You
Oh,
know,
no. Back in the
and
day, some of
so
the baseball cards, yeah, they were
yeah,
not.
and just the you know the athletes, you know, you could think, you know, like you could trade a Shelby Houlihan rookie from a few years ago, and you know we got a shot of her from Millrose, and you know there are just so many athletes whose careers we see develop and unfold, and the you know,
Yeah.
a Cesarek rookie might be a, you know, a fun card to have, and also like the athletes themselves are so kind and interesting, and you know, there's clearly you could have statistics on the back of
Of
the cards
course.
about their times and their, so I think that it's an idea that you know, perhaps I hope is developed. I think the issue is that there's no demand for them, and if you look at the card industry in general, it has really shifted quite a bit. You know, I was in a 7-Eleven the other day. I was like, wait, maybe I can try and find a pack of baseball cards. You can't buy a pack of baseball cards anymore. It's like
Really?
the cards are sold, and it basically you get the complete set at a Walmart if you're lucky, but you probably can't get it because the dealers have already gone in and swooped them all up. So it's changed from the it seems like for baseball and football cards, it's changed from a hobby where a lot of kids go and get the packs, and to one where it's sort of a lot of dealers go in, and it's and some of the big money investors have gone in, and it's more of a speculative thing, and there are tons of different sets for the baseball cards and football cards, so
Yeah.
it's changed. It's changed, but I do think that there's still I still think it's a good idea.
I suspect it's like a bit of a long-term play because I think what maybe creates the value is when it passes on to another generation and people want to reflect back on the heroes of their youth. So I imagine like a Steve Prefontaine card or something like that
Yeah,
would be
exactly.
valuable if that was big
Yeah. Like, I mean, looking back, if these had been in circulation for 40 years, yeah, Prefontaine card, a Kipchoge rookie, a Bekele rookie. Can you imagine? Gebre Selassie rookie. You know? And it's not just the super superstars. I mean, there's like a Nick Simmons might be fun to have when he was just busting on the scene. You know, there, you know, a lot of different American heroes, and Allison Felix rookie certainly would be a great card to have. But really, any Allison Felix card, and she's got such a following, and you know there are some of these athletes do have tremendous following, so it doesn't seem like it's an impossible idea to or a terrible idea. So maybe it just needs to be done right.
It'd be interesting to see what happens to the value of runners who get caught doping, like Wilson Kipsang. Would his value have plummeted, his rookie card?
Yeah, and that's a good question. Indeed, if you look back at the equivalent of baseball cards, I mean I don't think that the Bonds and the Clemens and the Sosas and Maguires are worth as much as they would have been without the doping. You know, I think the Ken Griffey Jr. cards have held up decently because it's just, you know, he's not suspected to have doped.
Well, I'm sorry I scoffed at you, Bren.
No, it's
Can
not,
I make it
Greg.
up to you?
You know,
Can we
it's
do
not,
this?
you know, if we can figure out how to do it, let's do it. If we can't, maybe somebody else will do it, and I'm all in. I think that it would be interesting. And you think of all the people who go to Let's Run, say, you know, they're dedicated track geeks. Like, so if you did something that was halfway decent, I'm not sure certainly there are issues about getting the athletes' permission and the rights and this and that. And maybe it's something that the USATF would have to do. But
Probably.
it seems like if there were a decent set put up there, then maybe 100 people would buy it the first year. But if track and field is something, and running generally, and wellness, and is something that the youth of today can get more into, then it's something that could have long-term appeal. And something that could appeal to kids and get kids interested in the sport. And on a final note, Greg, there, I'm going to be coaching soon a bunch of kids
Are you?
here at Westport.
Oh, how
There's the
cool.
Westport Joggers Club is starting the Westport Joggers Junior. So we're going to get some kids on a track and we're going to see what we can do. So
Excellent.
I won't push this idea too hard on them at the very beginning, though.
Excellent. How old are the kids?
I think we're going to do 3rd to 8th grade to start. See where it goes.
Wonderful. Now that should be very rewarding. Very cool. I'd love to do something like that. In fact, I'm
Yeah.
thinking about something similar.
Yeah.
Hey, Brent,
Yeah.
I have one more idea. You mentioned Nick Simmons. Doesn't he a sponsor? One of his sponsors is Run Gum. Can we have Run Gum in the pack of running cards?
That's a great insight. I guess Nick is the guy we should talk to about this. And it's interesting you bring that up because yeah, people associate cards with gum. Interestingly, those cards that were worth so much money from, you know, 100+ years ago, those were sold in cigarette packs.
That's right. The Honus
So,
Wagner cards, cigarettes.
yeah. So apparently it was the kids convincing their parents to buy more cigarettes so they could get the trading cards. So
Very interesting.
if gum really makes you run faster, I'm sure it's not as bad for you as cigarettes. So run gum in a pack of trading cards. How come this hasn't been happening already?
Well, we welcome any ideas from our listeners, and we'll even cut you an equity slice.
Yeah, and if you know Nick and you can connect the dots, let's get this done.
Or if there are any gum manufacturers out there, call us.
Yep, sounds good.
Anyway,
All
Brent,
right.
it's
Well,
great.
on that esoteric note, it's been a bit of an odd episode, but we'll get back to talking, you know, more about the runners in the pro scene as the trials are not too far away for track and field. And this is Greg. It seems like it really is an Olympic year, so we will have a lot to talk about on the pro scene, and we are very excited to delve back in there. But we'll keep this short and sweet. So for Greg Lemelstein, this is Bren Jones. See you next time on Cloud 259.
Forget about your house and car.